Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 1373. 40 Wall Street, part one. This is being recorded on February 15th of the year 2025. Very quickly, please place an order for the new 64-gigabyte flash drive. We've gotten too much material for 32 gigs. It is not ready yet. It won't be ready for a while. Who knows what's going to happen, but things are not looking good. That will have all of my life's work printed and recorded. It will have the remarkable comments by Parafractal, which will be our contributing editor, which will be front and some of those will be front and center in the program today, and also a mini library of old anti-fascist books on easy to download PDF files. We're also digitizing very slowly some reel-to-reel tapes from sister station KALX, that's the UCal Berkeley station. And if those aren't on this flash drive, they'll be on the next one. Assuming there is a next one, and who knows what's going to happen. Now, I was planning on continuing a discussion of Korea because things could very easily heat up there. Donald Trump has been rattling sabers toward North Korea, saying that they will soon have a nuclear missile which could reach the United States, which may be true. The U.S. has a lot of nuclear missiles that can reach Korea and any other place. And I think that the situation there is ripe for ignition. I've done five shows on that. And what I have done in the written description for the record programs 1371 and 1372, Korea on Our Minds, parts 4 and 5, I've included a lot of printed information that was not in the original pair of broadcasts. And those should hopefully bring people up to speed. Cutting that planned series short, again, as critically important as what is going on in Korea is, there is just too much going on. Now, we are going to be going into a series of programs about the ongoing coup d'etat in Washington. And yes, there is a coup d'etat going on in Washington. The, quote, downsizing of the federal government, completely illegal, by the way, completely unconstitutional, is in fact a coup d'etat by a person who is not only the richest man in the world, that's Elon Musk, but he's an individual with roots in apartheid-era South Africa, as we have looked at in many programs and as we will reiterate in a series on the coup and other events. The apartheid era South African government was dominated by an organization called the Broederbond, B-R-O-E-B-E-R-B-O-N-D in Afrikaans, or Brotherhood in English, that was structured along the lines of the German Nazi Party in Germany during World War II by a high-ranking Gestapo agent named Graf Bruckheim von Montmartin. The apartheid era South African government was quite literally an offshoot of the Nazi Party in Germany. And we will be talking about that coup d'etat and also the inability of many to identify that as a coup d'etat. It's not a constitutional crisis. That happened a long time ago. We will, I think, read a short Substack article by the former Labor Secretary Robert Reich, who talks about nobody calling it a coup. Well, that is true. Some are. But there was a, as we have spoken about so many times, there was a coup d'etat in the U.S. on November 22nd, 1963, and that was the end of America as a democracy. It was the end of a whole lot of other things, too. Two wars, both thought to have ended long previous to that, ended with results the opposite of what we were told. One of those wars was World War II. It ended on November 22nd, 1963, and the Axis won. Fascism won. And the other war was the Civil War, or the War Between the States. That also ended on November 22nd, 1963, in Dallas, Texas, and the South won. Take a look at what is going on. And again, there is just too much going on. I can't possibly cover that in the weekly broadcasts. Please be aware of the consummately important contributions of Terra Fractal. That's capital PTERRAFRACTYL. His posts are really, really important, and you should check those every day on the SpitfireList.com website in order to keep up. And even then, there is just too much going on. I'm also doing a Patreon platform, which has three weekly talks plus bi-weekly Zoom talks plus articles that I've written. And even then, there is just too much going on. But that will certainly give you probably more information than you can probably digest between the weekly shows, Terra Fractal's brilliant, incisive comments, and the flood of information on the Patreon site, the three weekly talks, the articles I've written, the bi-weekly Zoom talks with special guests. That will give you plenty, but there is so much going on. By the way, Monty has experienced a couple of profound personal tragedies. I will let him explain those when he returns to our airwaves as probably an expert commentator, because I don't want to overload someone who has been through a lot. He's 100% disabled from his service 10 years in the military. And, well, again, I don't want to overburden him, but, again, two huge personal tragedies have taxed his PTSD, and he's dealing with those, and when he is capable of doing that, he will return to our airways when he's worked through that. But in any some of the many, many things going on, Trump and Brainworm Bobby, in charge of HHS, have slashed the Epidemic Intelligence Service that was originally put together to detect biological warfare attacks. It is consummately important for detecting pandemics. It has now been kneecapped. And also at the very same time, perhaps coincidentally, perhaps not, the U.S. is opening a Level 3 biosecurity lab in Germany. Isn't that interesting? An allegedly Russian drone, right, probably almost certainly Ukrainian, has damaged the protective sarcophagus at the Chernobyl nuclear reactor. And also the Ukrainian army has attacked the International Atomic Energy Enforcement Administration, the UN's Atomic Energy Monitoring Group, as they will go into the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. Stay tuned for a possible nuclear provocation. Stay tuned for a possible biological warfare incident in the U.S. Do not lose sight of something else we're going to talk about, and that is an MIT professor. MIT has often been dubbed the Pentagon under Charles, referring to the Charles River in Boston and Cambridge. And an MIT professor had some students who were able to successfully recreate the 1918 influenza virus. And he warned about the possibility of bioterrorism from, of course, China, Russia, or North Korea, naturally. And be aware now that Mr. Ratcliffe from Texas has now officially changed the position of the CIA. Yes, COVID came from a lab leak in China. That is complete drivel. It's not only contradicted by the facts, but it's absurd because it's technologically obsolete. Using CRISPR-9 technology, basically the genome of any mammalian virus that can be observed or accessed online can be reconstructed and or reconstructed in modified fashion from scratch. It is analogous to a 3D printer. Those are just some of the things going on. Again, be aware of Brainworm Bobby and his HHS. In addition to everything else that's going on, people are tearing their hair. What can we do? What can we do? There probably isn't enough labor solidarity in this country for a general strike. But that is the way to deal with this. It's a general strike. But Americans are too busy looking at their smartphones, or I call them dumb phones. One way or another, they're too busy enjoying having their buttocks for earmuffs, and don't bet on that. But the way to deal with what's going on, a general strike. That's the way to deal with it. But don't bet on that. Now, among the many things that are going on, and again, we're going to deal with the coup d'etat going on. We're going to talk about Elon Musk, his conversation with Alice Wiebel, W-E-I-B-E-L, of the AFP. By the way, the AFP was at the inauguration. Were you aware of that? And Elon Musk and Alice Wiebel were in agreement that Adolf Hitler was a communist and a socialist. Well, no doubt. I guess all these decades I've been thinking that Adolf Hitler was a German or undercover German army intelligence agent, specifically charged with combating communism. But I guess I was wrong. And I guess what he did in the Soviet Union, well, that must have made him a communist somehow. I don't know. But obviously I'm being facetious. J.B. Vance has lectured Europeans about they shouldn't censor the AFP. Well, again, everything you need to know about the AFP. Alice Wiebel got on there with Elon Musk saying, yep, Hitler was a communist. No doubt. Now, those who are wringing their hands about the coup d'etat, then they range from Robert Reich to Ralph Nader. They are correct as far as it goes, but this is not the first coup we've had. And the JFK assassination crowd, again, I have deep roots to them and grew up with them. I have much respect for them, but they have been seduced, I think, a lot of them, and they are eagerly looking forward to the release of JFK assassination files and MLK files and RFK files. They're overlooking the obvious consideration that who is to say if all the files that are released are really all of the files? I sure as hell wouldn't bet on that. In fact, I would bet that they won't be, or they will still be altered or whatever. But there's also something very important. For a long time, Nazis, fascists, and Holocaust deniers have hovered around the periphery of the JFK assassination inquiry. And that, among other reasons, is because once people come to the fundamental realization that not only did Lee Harvey Oswald not act alone, Lee Harvey Oswald didn't act at all. There's no way he fired a weapon on November 22nd, 1963. He didn't kill JFK. He didn't kill Officer Pippin. And once you realize that, once you realize that James Earl Ray was framed, once you realize that Saran Saran was under mind control, that he was framed, it leaves many people in a relativistic universe, particularly young people. And they begin to wonder, well, gee, maybe the Holocaust didn't happen. And with the likes of Elon Musk and Alice Wiebel saying, yep, Hitler was a communist, that one just might have legs. But anyway, watch out for that, because I see people, and I won't name names, but people whom I hold in high esteem, appearing with Tucker Carlson, who has given the airwaves, to his airwaves, to Holocaust deniers. And I think that they should think, reflect very carefully on that. I certainly understand the motivation, having been marginalized and spat upon for all these decades, to have mainstream media access is certainly in one sense very refreshing, but I think the nature of that access needs to be taken very, very seriously and carefully. And with the reduction, by the way, 40 Wall Street is the crown jewel of Donald Trump's real estate empire. It was a focal point of the recent case in New York in which he was found to have misrepresented his personal wealth. We're going to talk about 40 Wall Street and who Donald Trump is in bed with. But first, for those of you who are eagerly awaiting the release of the JFK files, let's take a look at who is going to be presiding over that. From The Independent, a British paper, meet Anna Paulina Luna, L-U-N-A, the GOP lawmaker tasked with revisiting JFK's files and Epstein's list as well. Donald Trump is among the people. He may not have visited Epstein's island, but he certainly was, by many accounts, engaged in Jeffrey Epstein's fun and games. The subtitle here, Republican firebrand believes there were, quote, two shooters, unquote, and promises, quote, transparency, unquote, to reveal, quote, federal secrets, unquote. This is by Alex Woodward, W-O-O-D-W-A-R-D, from February 12th of 2025, and it reads in part, the Republican Congresswoman past revisiting federal secrets, unquote, or revisiting, quote, federal secrets, unquote, surrounding the assassinations of John F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr., and Jeffrey Epstein's so-called client list, unquote, is among a new class of GOP insurgents and Donald Trump loyalists who recently floated the bill to put Trump's face on Mount Rushmore. Florida Representative Ana Paulina Luna, by the way, of Mexican heritage, not Cuban, a member of the far-right House Freedom Caucus, who was elected to the House in 2022, has repeatedly pushed for, quote, transparency, unquote, in federal government, specifically to dive into conspiracy theories surrounding unidentified flying objects, the origins of COVID-19, and the September 11th attacks, all of which will be at the center of her task force. Quote, the federal government has been hiding information from Americans for decades, unquote. Quite true, she said in a statement Tuesday. The government has spent years investigating political assassinations and, quote, other government secrets without success, she claimed. And, quote, it is time to give Americans the answers they deserve, unquote. Okay. She says there were two shooters. Well, there were at least three. And Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't one of them. But note what she's talking about here. Conspiracy theories surrounding unidentified flying objects. To make a very, very long story, very, very short, UFOs are real. Space aliens aren't. Radar, right, invented at the beginning of World War II, sends out a radio beam, and when the electrons encounter a right angle, right angles don't exist in nature, it's basically a contact. It bounces back. Well, from an early time period, because of that, nations around the world were experimenting with airframes that avoided right angles. And obviously a disc-shaped airframe has no right angles and therefore is impervious to conventional radar. Plus, you've seen a Frisbee, right? That is a disc-shaped airfoil that when the motive force of one's hand is applied to it, it flies. Well, do you really think that all of the powers that be in the government with all of their incredible resources couldn't make an effing Frisbee? Well, guess what? They damn bloody well did. They did it a long time ago, and the disc-shaped airframes are impervious to radar, huh? Stealth technology. There are no bleeping space aliens. But now keep an eye on this. As I've said before, the head of America's space program, Wernher von Braun, was an SS officer who helped to select the slave labor that was worked to death in the Nazi rocket factories. He became the head of America's space program, and he is the co-founder of the Institute for Noetic Sciences, which is one of the epicenters of the so-called New Age. Examine the so-called New Age, and so much of it tracks back to the nine, the tall, blonde, fair-skinned, blue-eyed space aliens from which all life eventually evolved. And they are also, you know, deities of the Egyptian gods evolved from the blah, 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 blah. Well, no doubt, space aliens are tall, fair-skinned, with blonde hair and blue eyes, no doubt. And, keep an eye out for what I've warned about for decades, when everything is going completely to hell, people have no work, the food is poisoned, there are pandemics coursing around, and they don't know what to do when they say, oh, I'm just so miserable, I'm so beset, what can I do? And suddenly someone says, look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane. No, it's space aliens from Uranus. And the UFO op, our brothers from space, the nine, the tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, fair-skinned space aliens from which we all evolved, will come down to save us. Also, the origins of COVID-19. Brainworm Bobby has opined that it was a genetically engineered virus that came from China, and Chinese and Ashkenazi Jews are immune to it. And it was genetically engineered. Again, Brainworm Bobby is in charge of HHS, which also includes Medicare and Medicaid. And, of course, the September 11th attacks. I have many years' experience in the building trades and the whole controlled demolition thing is just absolute BS. It is so far gone that it took me a while to realize that people actually took that seriously. I've done a program about that, For the Record 599, but it's just complete drivel. There was, in fact, a massive conspiracy behind September 11th, but it wasn't a goddamn controlled demolition. In For the Record 186, on the last week in December of 1999, I noted that because it was obvious that George W. Bush was going to get the nomination, and that he would probably win the election, and I noted that George W. Bush's first business venture, Arbusto Energy, was capitalized in large measure by the family of Osama bin Laden. That program was called What Does the W in George W. Bush Stand For? And that alluded to George W. Bush's background. Of course, we didn't hear very much about Osama bin Laden during George W. Bush's presidency, did we? Nah. Now, back to the redoubtable Ms. Luna, who's going to hip us to everything and, watch out for the UFO op, watch out for, that COVID came from China, and, there was a controlled demolition of the World Trade Center and all the BS. And, of course, and a lot of people will believe this because anybody who knows anything knows that Lee Harvey Oswald didn't kill Kennedy. And Ms. Luna thinks there were two shooters. Well, there were at least three. But now, as to Ms. Luna's background and her credibility, from I-24 News of February 12, 2023, Congresswoman's claim of Jewish heritage omits Nazi grandfather. Report challenges assertions she was, quote, raised as a Messianic Jew by her father, unquote, and was, quote, also a small fraction Ashkenazi, unquote. Reads in part, a Republican congresswoman whose claim regarding being raised as a Messianic Jew by her father, unquote, could not be verified by fact-checkers, appears to have distorted her family history in an even more striking manner by omitting mention of her paternal grandfather's military service in Germany during Nazi rule. And apparently both her father and her grandfather identified as Catholic, and she also apparently distorted many other things about her background. And that, according to many, many sources, and including the Washington Post, and of course they wouldn't lie, but the veracity, of course, of Ms. Luna is obviously called into question. And she is of Mexican heritage. I do not think it is an accident that she has a someone who served in Hitler's military in her background. He supposedly was young, drafted into the Wehrmacht. When the Nazis went underground, which they began doing in the fall of 1941, very early on, because they knew they weren't going to win the war in Russia or the Soviet Union, and they knew that the U.S. was going to come into the war and that was going to do it, they began going underground and they sanitized the records of those who they were going to use in the future. And according about Ms. Luna's father, George Meyerhofer's father, Heinrich Meyerhofer, M-A-Y-E-R-H-O-F-E-R, immigrated to Canada from Germany in 1954 after serving in the ranks of the Nazi military. Well, I wonder if he was just Wehrmacht or whether there was more to it than that. Certainly, many SS and Gestapo people not only emigrated to Canada, but then into the U.S., so who knows? But I doubt that it's an accident that Ms. Luna had a Nazi grandfather and misidentified that. Also, Messianic Jews, they are Jews that accept Jesus as the Messiah. And another thing that should be looked out for, Messianic Jews, the evangelicals believe they want to see Israel reestablished because they believe that only after Israel comes into maximum being will the War of Armageddon come to pass. And at that point, Jews will either convert to Christianity or they will be killed. Keep an eye on what's going on in the Middle East, too. Don't be too surprised. The thing that first interested me in UFOs was when that Billy Graham, right, very close to Donald Trump and Richard Nixon, and a political animal, if ever there was one, he said that UFOs are real. They're angels sent by Jesus. Well, that is interesting. Don't be too surprised if the angels sent by Jesus, a.k.a. UFOs, come down and the Jews in Israel convert or die. Anyway, there appears to be a lot of fun on the horizon. Now, 40 Wall Street, that's the series. Maybe because the intro took a lot longer than I thought. It may go on for three shows, but in this, 40 Wall Street is the building that is the crown jewel of Donald Trump's real estate empire. It also was the focal point in the recent proceeding concerning Donald Trump misrepresenting his net worth. And in terms of understanding who is in power in Washington, who is executing the coup, and there is a coup underway, I think it is very important to understand the true nature of Donald Trump. And as always, you want to understand the true nature of anything, follow the money. And that's what we're going to do here. And Donald Trump is in business with some very interesting people. And in this series, I'm going to rely not only on some brilliant work by a loyal listener, but also the brilliant work of Tara Fractal. And I'm going to read some of his commentary and reread some of the sections of the articles that are presented here. Now, about 40 Wall Street. Tara Fractal introduces this. The Trump Casino is open for business. Reopened, really. Not his Atlantic City casinos. Those all went bankrupt. No, it's a much higher stakes casino, secretly bribing this historically corrupt president. Although, after the Supreme Court's presidential immunity ruling, it's not even clear that you'd have to do it in secret. And anyone on the planet can play in the casino, as long as they have deep pockets and an ability to somehow direct the contents of those pockets into Donald Trump's bank accounts. And by the way, there are many links in the presentation. Those will be available in the written description for the records for 1373, 1374, and who knows, this may go into 1375. Continuing. It's that gross corruption, increasingly out in the open, that brings us to a fascinating pair of stories about the incredible corruption potential found in the, quote, crown jewel, unquote, of President Trump's commercial real estate portfolio, the 40 Wall Street building. Or at least the former crown jewel in Trump's portfolio. It turns out Trump has been overstating the value for this property so egregiously that it ended up as being the centerpiece of the New York State civil lawsuit against Trump over the systematic defrauding of banks he engaged in for years with routine misrepresentation of his property's valuations. A lawsuit he ended up losing, and it resulted in $489 million fine with interest that could be more than enough to wipe out Trump's cash reserves. And that's on top of the $114 million mortgage Trump still owns on the property. And by the way, now that he won the election, don't bet on him ever paying that up. Continuing with Tara Fractal's observations. Even worse, given the cratering of commercial real estate post-pandemic, the income generated from the property may not be enough to even cover the mortgage payments. Adding to the crisis is the fact that Trump has such a toxic reputation at this point that many of the remaining tenants have indicated they would like to relocate at the earliest convenience. It's the kind of situation that had Donald Trump facing the potential loss of his former crown jewel. Or, at least, that would have been the case had Trump lost the 2024 election. At this point, Who knows how he'll be able to turn the situation around, or if he'll somehow end up getting the fine dropped entirely. Given that it's a state-level fine, Trump can't just pardon himself, and the opinion from New York Attorney General Letitia James last month was that Trump still had to pay the fine, president or not. We're obviously in uncharted territory here when it comes to what the president can and cannot do. But that massive civil fine and the repressed valuation of what was once Trump's crown jewel is just part of what makes the 40 Wall Street property so grimly fascinating in the context of a Trump second term. Because there's another very strange dimension to this story. It turns out that Donald Trump's ownership of the 40 Wall Street Tower does not actually include the ground beneath the tower. Instead, the original builders signed a long-term lease with the investors who own the land. As a result of that unusual ownership arrangement, it's actually possible for those investors to take control of the entire tower should Donald Trump fail to make his rent payments. Now, as we're going to see, a scenario that involves Trump handing over ownership of the tower to the landowners appears to be highly unlikely at this point, in part because the investors appear to be on very friendly terms with Trump. So, who are these investors? In other words, who is behind Donald Trump? That's not 100% clear, which is also part of this story. It turns out that two LLCs own the land, and technically, it will be possible for the two owners of those LLCs to change hands without any public disclosure. Parenthetically, note that the Borman Group has achieved its excellence and dominance in no small measure because of secrecy. They deliberately maintain a low profile, or no profile if possible. And that's characteristic here. But now, a terrifactor goes on to comment. But we do have a vague idea of some of the original investors. Stephanie von Bismarck. Does that last name ring a bell for any of you folks? Stephanie von Bismarck? Yeah, that's right. She married into the von Bismarck family, the family of Otto von Bismarck, the so-called Iron Chancellor. One more time. But we do have a vague idea of some of the original investors. Stephanie von Bismarck, Joachim Ferdinand von Grumme Douglas, and siblings Anita, Christian, and Walter Hindenburg. By the way, the spelling of Grumme Douglas, capital G-R-U-M-M-E, hyphen B-O-U, capital D-O-U-G-L-A-S. The purchase by the five German investors was made on December 7th, 1982. Today, the Hindenburgs, by the way, a powerful German shipping family who own much of the cargo shipping that is involved with the supply line. One more time. The purchase by the five German investors was made on December 7th, 1982. Today, the Hindenburgs appear to control the LLC that owns 80% of 40 Wall Street, with Joachim von Grumme Douglas owning the other 20%. It's unclear if Stephanie von Bismarck is still an owner. As we are going to see, these weren't ordinary investors. The Hindenburgs come from one of the largest shipping broker dynasties on the planet, and Stephanie von Bismarck and Joachim Ferdinand von Grumme Douglas both appear to be closely related and both hail from prominent German aristocratic families. The Hindenburgs also appear to not just be very chummy with Donald Trump, but they've been involved with organized, similar kinds of, quote, anti-elite, unquote, political movements in their home city of Hamburg, Germany. By the way, just a note in passing. Talking about, you know, quote, anti-elite, or quote, anti-establishment manifestations of Team Trump. Yeah, and they're joined at the hip with the richest men in the world, and you've got the three richest men in the world. I mean, it's just, you know, if they don't constitute the elite, well, I don't know who does. And so this is, it's wonderful. But, you know, Team Trump don't believe anything. Continuing. The Hindenburgs also appear to not just be very chummy with Donald Trump, but they've been involved with organizing similar kinds of anti-elite political movements in their home city of Hamburg, Germany. And again, we don't actually know who else is involved with this investment group. These are potentially just the public faces. And continuing. But there's another very interesting piece of history related to these German investors. Donald Trump was not the first person to lease the tower from these investors after they purchased the land in 1982. Prior to their purchase, the group of investors George Comfort, Henry Loeb, LOEB, and Clifford Michel, MICATL, had been leasing the tower from the landowners. But just 3 weeks after the German land purchase, the investors leased the tower transferred one more time. But just 3 weeks after the German land purchase, the investors leasing the tower transferred the leasehold to an entity that was later found to serve as a vehicle for hiding the wealth of Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos. Following Marcos's exile in 1986, the U.S. government eventually seized control of the tower. And as we have seen, and as we will see again, Ferdinand Marcos's wealth came from recovering the Golden Lily Loot, the enormous, almost unimaginably huge amount of wealth stashed in the Philippines. And again, the Japanese, during World War II, looted the entire liquid wealth of Asia and secreted it to be recovered over the next 100 years. The Philippines alone had $100 billion in gold stashed in it, and that was at the end of World War II when gold was valued at $35 an ounce. It's up to about over 2,000 an ounce now. And that's just the Philippines, and that's just gold. Continuing. But just 3 weeks after the German land purchase, again, that was on December 7th, 1982, so this would be still in December of 82, the investors leasing the power transferred the leasehold to an entity that was later found to serve as a vehicle for hiding the wealth of Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos. Following Marcos's exile in 1986, the U.S. government eventually seized control of the power. So with the transfer of the lease to Ferdinand Marcos just 3 weeks after the purchase of the land beneath the tower, we have to ask, was this mystery German investment group directly involved with the laundering of the vast Golden Lily World War II plunder that Marcos had been recovering? Because that timing sure is remarkable. They buy the land, and Marcos gets the lease. But was that all just happenstance? Because if not, that is a really interesting detail on the history of Marcos's vast international Golden Lily-related money laundering operations. And I've never heard about Donald Trump, that high-end real estate and gambling casinos are classic vehicles for money laundering, and that's what he has been involved with, meaning high-end real estate and gambling casinos. But no money laundering, of course not. As Parafactor goes on to come, that's all part of what makes the evolving story about 40 Wall Street so darkly fascinating. And this what makes the part, it, that's all part of what makes the evolving story about 40 Wall Street so darkly fascinating. And a story to keep an eye on. Not only do we still not know the complete identities of the mystery landowners who potentially have enormous leverage over Trump and therefore favors to ask of him, but it's also possible that this same mystery investor group has some sort of relationship to the Ferdinand Marcos Golden Lily chapter of history. By the way, the Marcos Gold, or the Japanese Golden Lily plunder, was merged with German plunder and formed the Black Eagle Trust. And I suspect that's what we're looking at here. Continuing. But by the way, that's contained in the book Gold Warriors by the Seagraves, from which we will be reading shortly, or presently. One more time. I'm repeating some of what Parafactal has written here. Not only do we still not know the complete identities of the mystery landowners who potentially have enormous leverage over Trump and therefore favors to ask of him, but it's also possible the same mystery investor group has some sort of relationship to the Ferdinand Marcos Golden Lily chapter of history. a chapter of history that remains wildly underappreciated to this day in terms of the role it played in the financing of the elite, international far right, and the real, quote, deep state, unquote. An international far right that has more or less captured control of the U.S. government at this point. So while we can be confident President Trump is going to be engaging in an orgy of gross corruption when it comes to his private business concerns and all the conflicts of interest that entails, keep in mind that when it comes to the corruption involving Trump's crown jewel at 40 Wall Street, the corruption could end up being a lot more historically significant. And again, a brilliant piece of research here by not only a regular listener and subscriber of the Patreon platform, but from Parafractal. It's why you should read the comments on the SpitfireList.com website. And the first article here is from the Curbed blog. It's capital C-U-R-B-E-D. By the way, I had oral surgery recently, so my mouth parts aren't quite working right, but hopefully this is comprehensible. Again, my mouth parts make me sound like an insect. But anyway, from the Curb blog, The Weird Worth of 40 Wall Street, subtitled, Donald Trump's most troubled real estate could soon become a slick machine to curry favor with the president. It's by Andrew Rice, R-I-C-E, a futures writer at New York Magazine, and he was assisted by Paula Aceves, A-C-E-V-E-S. This is from October 31st of 2024, just before the election. And Halloween, by the way. Trick or treat. The article reads, in April of last year, during his season of indictments, Donald Trump sat for a deposition and defended his worth. The session was held at the New York State Attorney General's office in Lower Manhattan in a large conference room with a southern exposure that looked out on 40 Wall Street, Trump's nearby copper-crowned Art Deco office tower. The building also happened to be at the center of that day's litigation. The building also happened to be at the center of that day's litigation, a civil lawsuit accusing Trump of defrauding banks by overstating the value of his properties. Trump grimaced as Attorney General Tish James opened the deposition with a promise of a, quote, fair and impartial, unquote, process. Over seven contentious hours, he brushed aside her team's questions about valuation. With Trump, it has always seemed the strength of assets proves the quality of the man. Quote, we have the Mona Lisas of properties, unquote, Trump testified, comparing himself to an art collector to whom cash flow is a secondary concern. He considered 40 Wall Street to be one of his masterpieces, maybe the cammiest deal of his career. Trump had acquired the skyscraper for just $1.3 million during a real estate recession in the 1990s, after which he convinced a bank to lend him money for renovations and rode the Manhattan office market back up. Kevin Wallace, W-A-L-L-A-C-E, a lawyer from James' office, handed Trump a document prepared for his creditors in 2013, which listed the value of 40 Wall Street at $530 million, more than 400 times his original purchase price. Quote, it's, I think, today worth more than that, unquote, Trump said. In reality, the building behind the curtain is once again worth next to nothing. This, by the way, was on Halloween of last year. One more pun. In reality, the building behind the curtain is once again worth next to nothing. Like many Manhattan skyscrapers, 40 Wall Street has been devastated by the post-pandemic. One more pun. Like many Manhattan skyscrapers, 40 Wall has been devastated by the post-pandemic office market crash. Its current operating income, as reflected in disclosures to its mortgage servicer, appears not to even cover its loan payments, and the building's market value today is almost certainly less than the $114 million balance Trump will owe when the mortgage comes due next year. That's this year. Continuing. One real estate investor said Trump's most rational move would be to, quote, throw in the keys to the lender, unquote, like other New York office landlords who have seen their trophies turn into emblems of disaster. Now, by the way, I'm going to reread long sections of the article Parafractal has presented those. This is very involved, and I was not even aware till reading these articles that you could have something like this, where you have people owning the land beneath the building, and that's kind of the real, sort of the real power, the real money lies. But again, it's very, very complicated. So, fasten your seatbelts for this particular ride. Continuing with this current article. Trump has built his identity around punching back and winning whatever the odds. But while that approach has brought him a stunning comeback in politics, putting him on the cusp of a second term as president, his original business, New York real estate, is on the ropes. Earlier this year, James won her fraud lawsuit, and the penalties the judge assessed, $489 million and counting with interest, could be more than enough to wipe out Trump's cash reserves if they stand up on appeal. His family company, the Trump Organization, has been hollowed out by criminal prosecutions and is now operating under the supervision of a court-appointed monitor. The company has been busy overseas, cutting deals to license Trump's personal brand to developments in places like Oman and Dubai, and hosting tournaments affiliated with the Saudi government-backed LIV Golf Tour. But at home in New York, Trump's name has become a repellent. Condo boards have voted to rip it off their buildings. The city of New York was glad to see him finally out of his deal to operate a public golf course in the Bronx so it could remove the, quote, Trump links, unquote, signage that was so conspicuous from the White Stone Bridge. Gucci, and that's the luxury brand, Gucci G-U-C-C-I, the anchor tenant in the aging mall at Trump Tower, managed to get Trump to slash its rent in 2020, but the retailer is once again rumored to be plotting a move since its parent company recently spent nearly $1 billion to purchase another building across the street. Trump's most lucrative real estate investments, his passive stakes in a pair of New York and San Francisco office buildings run by Vornado Realty Trust, are also worth less than they were before the pandemic. No Trump property, however, has experienced a fall like 40 Wall Street, which was once considered to be the single most valuable property in his portfolio. Quote, "What an effing mess that building is," unquote, says one real estate professional who is familiar with its state. Quote, "You could charge a nickel a foot, and no one wants to pay the Trump Organization rent," unquote. That, again, that may have changed. Of the 75 tenants listed on 40 Wall's rental rolls in 2015, the last time it refinanced its mortgage, more than 40 have left. Around two dozen others have long-term leases that appear to be set to expire in the next 2 years. Although the Trump Organization claims 40 Wall is still 75% leased, a few floors are entirely vacant and sitting on the sublet market. Its ground-level retail space is almost totally empty. In today's world, the 1930s vintage skyscraper is likely best suited for conversion to residential use to survive as an office building. It needs expensive upgrades. Either way, it will require a landlord and lenders willing to invest hundreds of millions in capital, a potentially tall order for a convicted felon whose largest source of personal wealth is his founder's stake in the profitless company that owns Truth Social, a meme stock that fluctuates with his poll numbers. And that's before you even get to the deal breaker. The fact that Trump doesn't own the land beneath his own building and must pay rent to a secretive group of foreign investors who have a contractual option to jack it up in a few years. One more time. And that's before you even get to the deal breaker. The fact that Trump does not own the land beneath his own building and must pay rent to a secretive group of foreign investors who have a contractual option to jack it up in a few years. Perhaps it seems discordant in this of all weeks to dwell on the fate of a mere building. Again, this is the last week. This is Halloween of last year. But to look out the window and examine 40 Wall is to imagine a pair of divergent scenarios. In one, Trump is the loser. His billionaire benefactors deserve him. His stonk goes to zero. I don't know what the misprint or whatever. Maybe that's a new slang, but his stonk, S-T-O-N-D, goes to zero. His super PAC donations dry up. The Saudis and other foreign governments lose interest in wooing his business. His prosecutions and his sentences go forward. His fines from civil judgments stand, and his legal fees drain his fortune. The rule of gravity pulls his company into distress, and he gives up the keys. Or he could win the election, in which case his fight to save 40 Wall could go in a very different direction, opening up novel ways for President Trump to leverage his office. When I brought up 40 Wall Street to people in the real estate business, even usually talkative salesmen went silent. A broker at Cushman & Wakefield, which acted as 40 Wall's leasing agent before the firm dropped Trump's business after the January 6th assault, wrote back, quote, "Better, but I don't." One more time. When I brought up 40 Wall Street to people in the real estate business, even usually talkative salesmen went silent. A broker at Cushman & Wakefield, which acted as 40 Wall's leasing agent before the firm dropped Trump's business after the January 6th assault, wrote back, quote, "Better, but I don't," unquote. Another broker who did a lease deal in the building, when reached on his cell phone, told me his train was going into a tunnel before the line went dead. He never picked up again. Of the sources who did agree to talk, several used the same metaphor in asking for anonymity, calling Trump a, quote, "third rail," unquote, as if just saying the name in public might get them zapped. Of the more than 36 40 Wall Street pennants contacted for this story, the vast majority declined to comment. A commercial office broker had described the building to me as, quote, "slow and sleepy," unquote. Soft music tinkled in the white marble lobby, where there was hardly a soul walking in or out on a summer workday. I got off the elevator at J Suites, a couple of J-A-Y Suites, on the 28th floor, which was decorated with a framed poster of Roger Moore sipping a martini. Past a giant red sculpture of a bear, I found my room, a generic unit with a sad plant, a large whiteboard, and a broken clock. One glass wall looked onto the hallway, where I could watch my temporary co-workers going about their days, phones pressed to ears. The value of 40 Wall Street was especially repressed by its unusual ownership structure. The bankers who constructed it had not purchased the ground on which it sat, instead opting to sign a long-term lease with the underlying landowners. The lease currently runs until 2059, with two renewal options that go on through the 22nd century. The owner of a ground lease acts in every way like a building's owner, keeping up with maintenance, paying property taxes, collecting rent, but he does not hold the deed to the underlying land, and if the leaseholder stops paying its ground rent or otherwise violates the lease terms, the landowner can foreclose. The leaseholder that sold to Trump, a company from Hong Kong, by the way, that was before it was taken over by China, had found 40 Wall impossible to manage, quote, "All they wanted to do is get the building sold and go back to China," unquote, recalls a former Trump Organization employee who worked on the deal. And so the seller was willing to accept the number Trump offered, barely more than zero. Then Trump did his thing. He slapped his name on the building. He met the ground owners, a group of silent German investors who had purchased the land in 1982. According to the Real Deal, 80% of the land is owned by a company representing the Hindenburg family, who run a Hamburg ship brokerage company, while the other 20% belongs to a group that includes Stephanie von Bismarck, a descendant of the Iron Chancellor himself, Otto von Bismarck. Trump hosted members of the family for dinner at his triplex in Trump Tower, and, quote, "just charmed them to death," unquote, the former employee said. Trump reasoned that most ground owners are just looking for a reliable return without hassle and expense. He promised stability in exchange for concessions that made it easier for him to rent the building and to take out loans to renovate it. He also negotiated a provision that said he could convert War 40 Wall into condominiums if he chose. Trump went to Deutsche Bank and pitched it on lending him $125 million for improvements. The executive who struck the deal memorialized it by commissioning a scale model of 40 Wall to display in his office, and Trump became a long-time Deutsche Bank client. By the way, we talked about the funky dealings between Trump and Deutsche Bank, a major vehicle not only of the Third Reich in its day, but of the Underground Reich and the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization, the element that I think will prove to be the decisive element in human affairs on this planet. Continuing, Trump promoted the building and filled it with tenants, many of whom were drawn by the cachet of a Wall Street address and the landlord's image as a winner. Trump used it as the headquarters of some of his enterprises like Trump Mortgage, his subprime home lender, and Trump University, which would later settle claims if it had defrauded students. And by the way, the Florida AG who negotiated that funky deal is Pam Bondi. She's now the Attorney General of the U.S. In 2016, a Bloomberg News investigation found that 40 Wall's past tenants have included a remarkable number of swindlers and felons. Since then, the executives running an engineering firm that is one of the largest tenants pleaded guilty to bribery charges related to government construction contracts. But 40 Wall also attracted plenty of small businesses and startups that were drawn to Lower Manhattan by its comparatively low rents. By 2015, the building was around 95% full. And again, we will continue with this article. I will overlap the reading in our next show with this one. And again, in Terrafractal's comments, he basically reposted a long excerpt of long sections of the articles and also added supplemental commentary. I'm going to read those into the record for this because, again, this is very complex. I was not even aware that something like this could take place where you have someone who owns a building and then beneath it, the ground beneath it is owned by someone else, and so you're leasing that from the ground owners, so to speak. And again, it's a complicated arrangement. It's going to get more complicated as things go on. But at any rate, we're almost out of time. The 64-gigabyte flash drive is not ready yet. It won't be ready for a while, but it will be ready. Please get it, because it's going to have all of my life's work on it, including the brilliant comics by Terrafractal, everything that I've recorded, everything that I have written. It also has a mini-library of old anti-fascist books on easy-to-download PDF files. And again, I get no money whatsoever from this. It's very affordable. And who knows if there will be another one, because things are moving very, very quickly, and they are going in a very bad direction indeed. So be aware of the possibilities. And again, the article from which we have been reading is from the Curbed blog, that's C-U-R-B-E-D. And again, it was authored by Andrew Weiss, a feature writer at New York Magazine, and Paula Aceves, A-C-E-V-E-S. It's from the Curbed blog, The Weird Worth of 40 Wall Street, October 31st of 2024. And we will continue with this in our next program. However, this concludes For the Record program number 1373, 40 Wall Street, part 1. This is being recorded on February 15th of the year 2025. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.